Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap. The Revolution hosted Nashville SC on Wednesday night, and it led to a very Nashville result, a 0-0 draw. Really nothing very exciting in this game, but the Revolution take a point away and increase their lead in first place in the standings. But obviously a lot to talk about, even though the game wasn't that thrilling. A lot of news since we last spoke to you, with Matt Turner and Henry Kessler winning the Gold Cup in the for the United States in the Gold Cup final. And also some news about Carles Hill, who is mysteriously out of the lineup this week. So without further ado, I want to bring in Sam Minton from the Bent Musket. This is the first time I've had Sam Minton on the podcast. And as I mentioned last time, I'm now a contributor to the Bent Musket. So this is the first time I'm ever introducing my boss, Sam Minton. So, boss, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Really excited to finally have a podcast with you.
I mean, I appreciate it. And I just love that you call me boss every single chance that you get.
I know you love it. This is a joke that you love so much. It reminds me of when I was dating my wife. In the first couple of years of dating, when I'd introduce her, after we moved in together, I started introducing her to people as my roommate. And I probably got away with that five times until she pulled me aside and said, "You need to immediately stop that." And I'm getting that kind of vibe from you right now. So I'm going to give it maybe one or two more podcasts that we do together where I'll call you boss. But then after that, I think you're going to give me a death glare, and that'll be that. But Sam, let's talk about this game, what we can from it. Really not a whole lot happened. Nashville played kind of a B team, bunkered in. The Revolution failed to break through, obviously missing Carles Hill in this game. And yeah, just a very Nashville, you know, Nashville's very happy to take a point and get out of town. And the Revolution, I don't want to say are too upset, but I think they kind of understood a draw as a draw. What was your key takeaway from this game?
Yeah, you know, obviously with Carles Hill out, you saw Tajon Buchanan slot into more of a central role, more of that number 10 role. And overall, I thought he did a rather good job. You saw some times where he was able to use his pace to still, you know, get by defenders and draw fouls. But it's also nice to see him get a few more shots than he might have used to. A lot of the shots, you know, were outside the box. They weren't exactly the most dangerous. But overall, I think it's a pleasant sign, basically based on the fact that we've seen the Revolution use this sort of diamond formation. And if they are going to use that, the question was, with Tajon coming back from Team Canada, where does Tajon fit into all of this? Are you going to have to take out a guy like Brandon Bye, who's having a pretty decent season? So it seems like, at least for now, obviously it'll depend on how long Carles Hill is out. But, you know, with Tajon showing that he has some of that flexibility, he can still make an impact, you know, drawing fouls and, you know, using his pace, that, you know, you could see him operate in a more central role compared to strictly being out on that wing. So it wasn't a very positive night, I guess you could say, for the Revs. Even as you mentioned, you know, Nashville put up a kind of a B squad. Obviously, they had some of the big guns come in after the 45th minute. But overall, I think the Revolution probably are a little bit disappointed that they were unable to, you know, get the 3 points. Anytime you're dropping points, you're never going to be happy. You're going to be happy that you at least got the draw, but they're probably going to be kicking themselves that they weren't able to do something in that first half.
Yeah, and there were a couple of chances, it seemed like, where they almost got some penalty kick opportunities. Gustavo Bowe looked like he was tripped by Jahlil Anibaba. I don't have the minute in front of me, but it went to VAR. It was around the 70th minute, and the referee overturned that, and it was ruled that Gustavo Bowe went down. He actually admitted, Gustavo Bowe admitted after the game, that he told the referee it was not a penalty. So that was probably, you know, the Revs' best chance of the night, when it seemed like they were going to get a penalty kick. There was another play, too, where I think it was a Brandon Bye cross to Adam Buxa, who is Buxa's smothered between Jack Mayer and Jahlil Anibaba. And Buxa is essentially sandwiched and shoved down. That looked like more of a penalty kick opportunity, but that one just went uncalled altogether.
So those were kind of the chances that really the Revs were hoping for in breaking through, because really it was a very tough Nashville defense to break down, especially without Carlos Hill. You mentioned Tajon Buchanan in the 10 role, playing in that central attacking role. I thought he played well. Obviously, there's a little bit of an adjustment, and obviously you have to give him some credit, you know, coming out of this Gold Cup. He's only had about a week off since playing Mexico last week, and to adjust into a new role to play centrally, which is really not an area we've seen him play, I thought he showed some flashes. Now, if you look at his heat map, he still was kind of trending towards the wings a little bit. So at times, it almost felt like a 4-3-3 with a kind of a diamond three in the central of the midfield, and then Tajon kind of hanging out on the wings. If you look at his heat map, too, he still is hanging out on the right side a little bit more than the left side. And if you look at Gustavo Bo's heat map, he's on the left wing a little bit more. So I you know, not to say that Carlos Hill doesn't roam and kind of play on the wings sometimes either. So I think that's by design. But this might be a role that Tajon can fill if Carlos Hill misses extended time. But he's obviously no Carlos Hill, and it's just not a, there's going to be a bit of a downgrade too. One question I do have for you, Sam, is that we saw Gustavo Bo take a lot of the responsibility from Carlos Hill. He took free kicks, he took corner kicks. We saw him a little further away from goal than we've seen him in recent weeks, kind of trying, being in that playmaker role and taking on a lot of the playmaker responsibilities. How did you think he did tonight in the absence of Carlos Hill?
Yeah, I think overall, you know, there's definitely some positives to take away. Essentially, you know, with Carlos Hill out, Gustavo, has a green light to shoot pretty much almost from everywhere. You saw that, you know, he was ready to take shots tonight, and he mentioned the post-game press conference, you know, they were unable to really get into the box, so he was trying to take advantage of those shots outside of the box. But when it came to something like set pieces, especially, you know, on corner kicks, I noticed it wasn't as, you notice a drop off. Obviously, it just seemed like compared to when you have Carlos Hill, you know, taking a set piece or taking a corner, when you have Gustavo Bo doing that, there didn't seem to be that level of threat, and it just didn't seem like there really was any sort of opportunities. It kind of looked like you saw some miss hits as well too. So when it came to the set pieces, it seemed like that was the drop off where you notice that we definitely do not have Carlos Hill. But you know, if I was a captain and kind of just, you know, like you mentioned, tracking back and doing more of the hard work, the dirty work. Obviously, he did pick up that yellow card, which had a lot of people nervous when he went down, because having Gustavo go down and Carlos would just be an absolute nightmare. But overall, you know, I thought he did a decent job. I won't act like he had an amazing game, but, you know, especially on those set pieces, you noticed a drop off from Carlos Hill.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And just, you know, I know we went through a full 2020 season without Carlos Hill, and that kind of showed us how important he is to this team. And it feels like we're reliving this nightmare all over again, where Gustavo Bo has to play a position where he's not as effective. And he still is, you know, fitting in, you know, well, and does a decent enough job. But there were certainly some crosses tonight that, or not crosses, but some set pieces and some corners that really, you know, you have to think that if Carlos Hill has taken them, they're a little bit better. They lead to some better chances. The one play I think that deserves a lot of credit from Gustavo Bo is he has a very beautiful left-footed cross to Teal Bunbury in the 90th minute. That was probably the best chance from the run of play from the Revolution, and Teal Bunbury heads it on to goal, but unfortunately it was right at Joe Willis, or a little bit to his right. It was an easy save. So I give Gustavo Bo a lot of credit, but again, this isn't really something I want to relive from 2020. It's not, you know, there's a lot of concern if we're missing Carlos Hill for an extended amount of time. And we did get a comment from Yaman's Dude on Twitter, who says that tonight's struggle to create was less about Carlos being out and more about Nashville coming to play for a point. Abolish Gary Smith, which is also a very good point. This is really, I think this is another, I'll say, key takeaway. And maybe this will be my key takeaway, because I really don't have a whole lot of things to talk about tonight. But this is really not the opponent you want to face when you're missing your key playmaker. You know, most teams are playing open. Even if Carlos Hill was in this game, you know, Nashville was going to sit back and play for a point. And, you know, I don't know how many goals you would have scored against them regardless, even if you were at full strength, even if you did have Tajon Buchanan a little bit more rested than he is from coming off of the Gold Cup. Or, you know, Buxa and Bo and all of them have been playing game after game, and this is a midweek game. It's in the rain. There were a lot of factors that came into play that led this game to pointing towards this game being a low scoring affair. And I can't say I was very surprised from it. It was very ugly soccer. So as much as I am kind of hitting the panic button on Carlos Hill, and I'm not thrilled to see him out and hope he comes back soon, I'm still not completely hopeless. And I still don't think that this is going to be the norm for the Revolution if he is out a decent amount of time. Although, and I'll also add to that, we have Philadelphia this weekend, too. And that's another opponent, too, that I think is pretty hard to break down. So we might go two games that are with 0-0 or maybe one goal scored between the two games. But I still don't think that's a fair representation of this team without Carlos Hill.
Yeah, and I think also, too, and just obviously with Nashville, they were doing rather well. And, you know, they were on the attack, you know, especially in those last games. You kind of saw them go out with the scoring outburst. But when you saw the lineup that they put out, you saw guys like Leal and CJ Sapong on the bench. You kind of got the sense that, yeah, this is going to be a classic Nashville game where we've seen it a ton of times with the Revolution, that they just sit back, you know, park the bus. And especially, you know, they've done it before the Revolution where they've gotten a goal and they just absolutely, you know, park the bus. And it was just, even though they were unable to get anything, Nashville, they once again just parked the bus and play for the draw. You know, credit to them. They were able to get a job done in their standpoint. But, you know, I definitely think the Revolution will be kicking themselves that they were unable to get anything going.
Yeah, definitely. I think a weakened B-team Nashville lineup, you know, no Walker Zimmerman, no Sapong in the starting lineup. There were certainly some players missing from this lineup that you were happy to see not in the starting 11. But Gary Smith brought in some players, Godoy and Sapong. And, you know, I think they were a more dangerous team in the second half, and that was very well by design by Gary Smith to sit back, kind of kill as much clock as possible. The Revs had 71% possession in the first half, and then around the 60th minute, bring in some players that can attack offensively. And there were a few balls in the you know, Revolution third, especially towards the end of the game there. There was kind of a sloppy clearance by Brandon By that led to a ball being thrown across the face of goal. And, you know, there were a couple of dangerous balls there deep. And Nashville also had a couple of plays where they were trying to boot it long. And I thought Henry Kessler and Andrew Farrell had some really good tackles today to kind of snuff those out. Normally, that's an area that the Revolution defense is a little bit weak or a little bit shaky. And we've seen some goals, you know, come from long balls. But for the most part, those were snuffed out today. And I really don't remember many dangerous Nashville counters in this match. So, yeah, I give Gary Smith a you know, really good game plan by him. He rested some starters, and he got out of New England with a point. So, yeah, we kind of played into Nashville's hands, but I don't think we can be too mad about it. And on the whole, I don't think we learned too much about the Revolution tonight. One note here I want to point out, Sean Donahue of the podcast tweeted out that the final expected goals, Revs 0.74, Nashville 0.49. So a really, really sloppy, not a lot of chances between these two teams. I feel terrible for anyone who had to sit in the rain throughout this game, but you know, I guess they were the man of the match for actually showing up and sitting through this one on a Wednesday night. But Revolution's winning streak is over, but they're extended their unbeaten run to 5 games, so there are some positives in this game tonight. Hey, Sam, one more note here before I move on. We did get a question from James Downing. He actually wanted to talk on a number of points from this week, one of which being the officiating in this game. I already mentioned the two plays in VAR. There were a couple of questionable yellow cards that went to the Revolution in the first half. Did you have any issue with the officiating tonight? Obviously, it didn't come into play at the end of the day. I think this is a very fair result, but did you have any beef with the referee or the officiating tonight?
Yeah, I'd say overall, I thought they did a decent job. The only major complaint I'll have is, you know, the Bo call. Obviously, we know more about it with Bo saying that he literally told the ref that it wasn't a penalty. But, you know, the fact that they went to VAR and it took that long, it's just something that you see with instant replay in any sport, really, that if it's something that has to be clear and obvious to overturn, if it's taking this long to overturn, maybe you just stick with the call that's on the field. Obviously, again, now we know a lot more, thanks to Gustavo. But I think overall, that would be the only real gripe. The Captoom call might have been a little soft. But overall, I think it was a decent game. And like you said, it wasn't anything where the officiating actually affected the game. It's a fair result for both teams. So I wouldn't say there might be some calls you can complain about. But overall, at the end of the day, that wasn't the reason why either team was not able to score a goal.
Yeah, agreed 100% on that one. I don't think you can really point to the referee in this one as having an effect either way. And certainly not every call was perfect. But, you know, I I can't sit here and complain too much. I've certainly seen much more worse officiating games. And a very good point, too, about Bruce Arena getting in that comment about how VAR is still not very efficient. It did take an extremely long time, I think about 5 minutes, for really a call that I didn't think needed 5 minutes of review. Even just the referee getting over to the VAR stand took a long time. So, yeah, still not efficient, still taking a little bit too long, but I can't say that, you know, waiting for VAR was any more thrilling than the actual game tonight. Well, we've been talking about Carlos Heel a lot. We've alluded to it. We need to get into why, you know, the Carlos Heel news, because this is pretty big. Most of our listeners probably know, but if you don't know this, the Bent Muskets' Seth McComber reported this week that Carlos Heel is going to be out for 3 weeks with a sports hernia injury. Not a whole lot is known. This was confirmed by a couple of other people on Twitter. Most notably, Revolution Nation confirmed it, and then I believe Gustavo Lopez also confirmed this. He's also a media member who seemingly confirmed it today at training. And then Bruce Arena went on 98.5 for his weekly interview and didn't outright deny it, didn't outright confirm it either. He noted that Carlos is not expected to miss time, and if he does, it's going to be a short-term injury. Which again doesn't give any idea of when, you know, what the timeline is. There's really lacking details. And then Sam, you mentioned in the press conference after the game, you asked Bruce directly if Seth's reporting was accurate and what part of it was accurate. And Bruce essentially said they have an announcement later this week. So Sam, with all that being said, what's your level of concern here? What do we make of this news?
Yeah, I think overall, when it comes to my level of concern, I'm concerned that Carlos Heel is hurt. Obviously, you know, Seth was reporting that, and I very much trust Seth's reporting. He's gotten plenty of stuff right, and even just when it comes to my time at the Bent Musket. So I know a lot of people were going at him, but if there's anyone you should trust, it's definitely Seth. But overall, I don't think, like you mentioned, you can't take a lot from this game. I think maybe against a different type of team, different style of play, you might see, you know, this team look better. But obviously, if you're going to miss Carlos Heel for any amount of time, it's going to be a big deal. He was an MVP candidate. He had this team at the top of the supporter shield. Losing a guy like that doesn't just impact the Revolution, and it impacts the entire league. And I think just overall, you know, from the team, obviously they're not going to disclose anything that they don't have to. 3+ weeks is a short amount of time compared to like 6 months. So take that with a grain of salt. Bruce, when I asked him very quickly, said that they'll have an update. So he didn't flat out deny it, didn't flat out say it was true. So I think there's a lot to consider when it does come to this injury. But overall, missing Carlos Heel is a big blow. He's been having a great season. Seemed like we were going to see him break that assist record. Now I don't know about that. But overall, you'd like to think that, you know, with a player like Tajon, they would be able to get through. You also have guys like Arnold Tristison, Wilfred Captoom. You just hope that they'd be able to at least survive. But if they play like they did tonight, obviously, again, Nashville was, you know, parking the bus. But if they play like this tonight, we could see them drop some points. And that could affect, you know, whether it be supporter shield or just overall how they finish. You know, that could affect how the Revolution look going into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think 3 weeks is about 5 games, so it's a pretty congested part of the schedule, which is not good to miss your best player. And I think the All-Star game is right after that too, which Carlos Heel got got voted to the All-Star game. We'll get to that a little bit later, but yeah, not good, pretty concerning. I'm really confused to why this is not being confirmed or released by the team. Now, we for those of you not on Twitter, there were some skeptics of Seth's reporting, which I'm very disheartened by, because Seth has been one, you know, he's been covering the team longer than I have, and I started covering the team in 2014. Very few people have covered the team as in-depth and as well as Seth has. And he's broken news before, and it's always been right. And it's really unfortunate to see people not give him the benefit of the doubt, and you know, it playing into that too, I think it shows you why some people, you know, there's not a lot of pluses to covering the team, and it's really discouraging when someone is covering the team out of his passion for the team and his love of the sport, and people are kind of giving him trash about it. So I just wanted to get that out of the way, that, you know, Seth is not operating in bad faith, as some have, you know, accused him of, and I know they're doing it out of anger over the news. But with that being all said, assuming this news is true, I'm confused to why it's not confirmed. You know, the Revolution certainly, you know this news is out there. I Seth does not make this up. I got to say that. So I'm curious if there's a misdiagnosis or if they need a second opinion. You know, obviously, you know, Bruce Arena said it on his interview earlier today that he's, you know, fine and he's not going to miss any time. But if he does, it's a short term injury. And then we see today that he's out. So it's very, very clear it's something. Maybe it's one game. Maybe it's 3 weeks. Maybe it's 5 weeks. We don't know. But the fact that he is not giving more clues to this makes me concerned that maybe this is a bigger injury than we currently know or that Seth has reported on, and maybe 3 weeks is what's expected right now. But if it is a bigger injury, you know, I'm concerned that there might be a second opinion, and later this week we're going to learn about that second opinion, or you know, they want to just confirm before they treat this properly. And I'm going to add this. A sports hernia, 3 weeks is on the lighter side. This is a minor injury in terms of a sports hernia. I think Artur over in Columbus just had surgery. He's out most of the rest of the season. So, I'm not trying to start any conspiracy theories here that there's more to this. But certainly the fact that the Revolution haven't come out and said, oh, it's just 3 weeks, it's just a minor injury, that news isn't that bad. And it's already out there. So why don't you just say that? And the fact that we're not getting those clear answers is a concern to me that further examination is needed. And if this answer of further examination is surgery, the Revs are screwed. So that's, again, I don't want to sound alarm bells because I don't know that. The best reporting we have on this is Seth. But I'm very confused why the Revolution don't just come out and say Carlos Hill is out 3 weeks. Everyone knows about this report. So I don't fully understand the hesitancy to give the media and the fans an update.
Yeah, and overall too, you know, you kind of mentioned it, just the fact that it doesn't really do any harm in saying that something that's already been reported is true. The only way it does harm is if you then have to come out and say, no, it's actually longer. So I just think overall, you know, when it comes to that, it just seems like a very easy thing to do. I know that the MLS has apparently become the NHL when it comes to injuries, where we're just going to say lower body or upper body. We're just going to sit, we're going to say out are available or questionable, and, you know, just not really disclose things. We're just going to act secretive, you know, compared to prior, you know, prior seasons. But I think overall, if you're just asked a simple question about a player being hurt and everybody knows about it already, and, you know, you have, you know, plenty of people, you know, big people knowing about it, that, you know, it's this well-known news. And again, as we've mentioned before, Seth's probably going to make fun of us for how much we're saying he's a great reporter. But, you know, he's done the work, and all we can do as the media is just ask questions. And, you know, even myself, I tried asking Andrew Farrell to see if he would say anything. Gustavo Bowe, they all just kind of gave generic answers. Don't blame them. But again, if it is longer, you know, if Carlos does have to get surgery, that's a damaging blow. That's something where you have to consider, can this team get to an MLS Cup final without Carlos Hill? And if that isn't the case, what does that mean for a player like Tajon Buchanan, who's getting transfer rumors? Instead of having to hold on to him, or him willing to stay, he's going to see those transfer offers in Europe. We've heard it, that Champions League team, we've heard Sporting, Juventus has been rumored, Bundesliga clubs have been rumored. If you know that your best player is out, and if Tajon Buchanan, or just the general consensus is that this team isn't good enough, it's going to be really hard to keep Tajon Buchanan. So obviously there's plenty on the field implications of not having Carlos Hill, but you also have to consider the off the field ones too, especially with plenty of people around the club getting transfer rumors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think this team is an MLS Cup team without Carlos Hill. I mean, he is, up to this point of the season, I think he's the league MVP. So, and there's just no replacing him. So it's a tough ask if he is out long-term. But again, I want to be very, very clear about it. The reporting right now is that the longest timeline is 3 weeks, or I believe the correct wording is 3+ weeks, which is a very minor injury. So from what we know from Seth, this is a minor injury. and it shouldn't impact long term. But we had an article today on the Bent Musket, Sam. Yeah, you know what? He was on the last episode, and we're saying Seth all the time. It's very confusing. I should have had Jake
it's
on
just
to
get
some different. Yeah. We had an article today about our level of concern, and everyone is threes and fours, because if you take this news on your on its face, it's one thing. But I put my level of concern around seven, because if this isn't a short-term thing, and if this is a lingering issue, or if this is more severe than we currently know of now, then you have a problem. So, you know, the Revs have built the lead in the Eastern Conference standings. This isn't a game-breaker. This isn't a game-changer. And I think that the Revs can weather the storm throughout August. And I think they'll learn a lot about their team with Carlos Hill out. We will get to, you know, try out different things. And we'll get to see who can step up when Carlos Hill isn't around. So it's going to be an opportunity for some guys like Teal Bunbury or Tristison or McNamara or Kaptoum. We're going to learn a lot about those players this month. So it might not be a bad thing in the end. But as I say, the news is one thing that's very concerning, but what's even more concerning is the hesitancy from the team to just say out loud, you know, yeah, this is what's going on. So it's a bit confusing on that end. Real quick, before I get into my next question, I do want to talk about our sponsor, Golasso Kits. Golasso Kits' mission is to bring unique and vintage jerseys to your home with a catalog of jerseys, jackets, scarves, and more from clubs and national teams from over 80 countries in the world. The passion for the beautiful game doesn't have borders, and neither does selection, with every corner of the planet represented. Go check out GolassoKits.com for their full selection, and make sure you follow them at GolassoKits on Twitter, and follow GolassoKits on Instagram as well. They post an update what new inventory has come in weekly, so you're going to want to see that to get a leg up on everyone else. And they do have some USA windbreakers from the 1994 World Cup. I talked about it in the last episode. There are still a few up, so you're going to want to check those out. Those are some pretty sweet jackets. And they still do have some Revolution items available, MLS items, NCAA, any team in Europe you can think of, they've got it. So whatever you like, go check it out. You'll find something. And when you do find something, use promo code REVSRECAP for 15% off your order. That's GolassoKits.com with promo code REVSRECAP for 15% off. The code and links to their website are in the show notes. Sam, Carlos Hill, we're still not done. Transfer window is closing tomorrow. That's taking a back seat. And I got some egg on my face because I've been saying this whole time, the Revolution are obviously going to make some improvements in the transfer window. But even before the Carlos Hill news came out, we asked Bruce earlier in the week at his weekly media availability. I actually think this was also Seth who asked this question, but he asked if there is going to be any reinforcements coming in, if they're close to making a signing, specifically the signing that Bruce Arena mentioned a few weeks ago with Elizabeth Pahota on Coffee with Coach. And he has said essentially anything can happen over the next few days, but don't bet on it, which is a very, very different tone. So he's telling everyone don't bet on the Revolution not bringing in anyone. So the first question is, what's your reaction to this? Are you surprised by this news? And then do you think that this might change with the news of Carlos Hill potentially being out for 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think overall, you know, it does. I'm a little bit shocked that they didn't try and boost, the back line. I especially think we've seen it with injuries and call-ups that you really have AJ De La Garza, and we were almost looking at Colin Verfeuf getting playing time, and with John Bell being injured. So I think it would be smart to boost it, whether that just be a veteran MLS player you don't have to spend a lot to get, or just, you know, someone that you can rely on to, you know, be kind of that bench player, or, you know, even possibly replace a guy like Andrew Farrell. As much as we love Andrew Farrell, you know, he's had an up and down season, I guess you could say, had some, you know, rough moments. First off, congrats to him. He's now tied with Shalery Joseph for the most starts in Revolution history. Have to believe he'll break that. So it's a great accomplishment for him. Thought he had a solid game tonight.
Yeah, save that ticket stub on Sunday. He's probably breaking the record. Most starts in franchise history. That's a pretty incredible achievement for someone who isn't even 30 yet.
Yes, and, you know, I think you should just use the promo code REVSRECAP when you do sell those, and then we'll get 15% off of your cut. And then also, too, you know, I just think you got to boost that position, because obviously the midfield, when you do have Carlos, is pretty locked down. You got Arne Tristison, you got Kaptoum, you got Tejan. Obviously, you got Bo and Buxa. It was very interesting. Obviously, Seth shared an article that came, I believe, from Poland. It was definitely in Europe, I can say that. Basically talking about how it was from January, and it seems like from the interview that Adam Buksa doesn't plan on being an MLS alum. He wants it to be some sort of, you know, stepping stone back to Europe. Obviously, things can change. That was in January. We're now in August. But it's very intriguing to see, but I still don't think Buksa leaves. So at the end of the day, I don't really think that Bruce will make a thing. I don't think Bruce will make a transfer, just because if it was, with all the news, it'll kind of look like a panic move. Don't think that's what Bruce exactly wants. And, you know, you do risk just kind of making a panic move and, you know, bringing someone in and maybe they're not the right fit. Maybe you overpay. So obviously, you know, we saw last year guys like Wei Win, you know, Tommy Mack and stuff like that, Matt Polster, they came in, they did a good job. But I just don't think they're going to hit the panic button per se, whether that's just to save face or just because they just don't want to make a transfer. And like Bruce said, it'd be surprising if they do. So I wouldn't say I would be shocked if there was a transfer, but I can't see it happening.
Yeah, I agree. I think Bruce is letting us down easy with his comments earlier this week. And I agree with you. I don't think they're going to be making a panic move in the wake of this Carlos Hill news, because first off, there's no replacing him. You just can't find someone in a few days to replace him. So it's kind of a hopeless venture to go and look for someone to replace Carlos Hill. And with that said, if they did bring in someone, I mean, maybe they'll make a minor move. Bruce has said comments before, like, we're good with our roster, we're happy with it, especially last year. And then 4 days later, you know, they traded for Lee Wynn. So it's still, I'm sure they're still going to work the phones. I'm sure they're still going to feel out people. But I don't expect anyone to leave this team. And if they do, it might be a very, very minor piece. Maybe just to balance the books or to dump some salary. I can't envision a scenario in which anyone on this team leaves. It would have to be a very, very, you know, strange scenario for someone to leave. Or as I say, to balance the books, kind of like a Wilfred Zahibo was traded to, you know, get Tommy McNamara. Maybe a move like that, maybe Earl Edwards Jr. moves, or, you know, maybe Luis Caicedo moves or something to that effect. But I don't think anyone who's getting minutes is being traded here over the next day. And as I say, I don't think we're going to see anything significant. Maybe there's going to be a minor move. I know I've checked out a few times before, like Omar Gonzalez is in Toronto. Maybe you give them a call and you throw, you know, maybe a draft pick at him and take him in a salary dump. The Revs do have some cap space, so they could probably take on a salary dump. But does that improve your chances at, you know, MLS Cup? Not really. It doesn't. So I would like a depth center back at the very least. A move like that is still better than nothing in my eyes. But, you know, Bruce moves fast. And the fact that we've gone through this entire transfer window with nothing going on, that kind of tells me we're not going to get a whole lot. And I don't think we're going to be seeing much activity at the transfer window tomorrow. I will say, too, that the roster freeze date is different, so they can still sign free agents. So you can still keep an eye out on people who are out of contract. But anyone who has a contract with team overseas or within MLS, that needs to be finalized tomorrow. So there's a bit of a distinction there. The Revs can still add free agents in the future, just not via trades, which is what I kind of expected Bruce Arena to do in this transfer window, and I'm pretty disappointed about it. But anyway, let's move on. We do have some other things to talk about I wanted to get off real quick. Actually, we do have a few questions. Let's get through the questions real quick, because they do kind of go back into the game a little bit, if that's okay with you, Sam.
Let's go.
Mike Kennedy asks us, what was the issue on the final third? Lack of communication between the Revs, good button defense by Nashville, all of the above. So what's your thoughts on the issues in the final third? I know we kind of talked about it a little bit with missing Carlos Hill, but anything else that you want to add on why the Revs struggled in the final third tonight?
Yeah, I would definitely say it's kind of a mix of all both options. But, you know, there were some times I did notice, you know, connecting on plays, that just some players in the attack did kind of just look a little bit off, not exactly in sync. Obviously, missing Carlos Hill could play a big part of that. But at the end of the day, you also have to recognize that Nashville's a very, you know, solid in their back line. Even though they don't have Walker Zimmerman, they're still very solid defensively. So it's a little bit mix of both, but it's definitely fair to say that there were some times where they did look out of sync.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there, and we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, but yeah, a little bit of all of the above, and I wouldn't take too much away from this game here. We did get another question from Mike Kennedy, not really about tonight, but where's Maciel? Bruce's doghouse seems odd. Sam, you were in Bruce's doghouse for asking this question just last week, ironically. I'll take this one, though, about Maciel, because he was mysteriously out of the lineup against New York Red Bulls. I believe he was out tonight, too. Is that correct, Sam? I'm trying to remember if he was on the bench.
I believe he was on the bench, yes. He was part of the match day roster. He just was on the bench. Don't believe he was used. But the fact that he was off the roster and is now on the bench and is being used, it's kind of intriguing. And yeah, Bruce was very happy that I asked about Maciel.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Sam asked for an update on Carlos Hill on Sunday, and Bruce at the time said he was fine. Obviously, we learned later that wasn't true. And then Sam also asked about Maciel, and Bruce said, "I'm playing a game. You know, Maciel's in Massachusetts. I'm in New York. I'm not watching him 24/7. So you got Bruce'd. But I don't know if I'd go so far to say he is in the doghouse. It is a little bit odd, and I thought that they could have used him tonight, and instead they went to Emma Boateng, and they kind of put him kind of on the left side there, and he did fine. I didn't have any complaints about it, but yeah, they went to Tommy McNamara, they went to Emma Boateng, they didn't go to Maciel, which was a little surprising to me. So he's not a huge offensive weapon, and if he's coming off of a bit of a knocker, a bit of an injury, maybe this wasn't the right scenario to play him, but I wouldn't go so far to say he's in the doghouse. But I think over time, more and more, I think Bruce prefers Capitum and Polster as his starting midfield pairing. And then I think he likes Tommy Mac coming off the bench. So I think we're just going to see less and less of Maciel, not really because of poor performance or because of doghouse. I just think Capitum is the starting central midfielder to pair with Polster.
Yeah, and it is just interesting because obviously there was some injuries to a guy like Capitum and others. So overall, you know, it is interesting to see that he is not, you know, kind of getting that same playing time. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't exactly think he is in the doghouse. And I am just going to sidetrack this conversation like Seth did. Because, of course, our lovely The Bent Musket group chat is just sharing some lovely news that, according to Christian Dyer of MLS Multiplex, Tajon Buchanan is, quote, nearing a move to a Bundesliga or Champions League or the both side. So I'm going to sidetrack that and say, apparently, we could be losing Tajon Buchanan rather quickly.
Oh, man, this is going to go off the rails again, isn't it? Oh, my goodness. You got to be joking me. Oh, my God.
I have to do Seth proud.
Oh, are you joking me? Hang on a second. All right. I'm going to look this up. While I'm looking this up and reading this, Sam, we're going to talk about the Gold Cup, and we're going to give our reactions here. I want you to tell me about your kind of general reactions to the Gold Cup, and who had the more impressive Gold Cup, Matt Turner or Tajon Buchanan?
It's very interesting because I think who made the biggest leaps, I would say Tajon Buchanan, but I would say overall the best performance I would give to Matt Turner. Obviously, I think Tajon proved just with him performing on the international stage, playing against, you know, guys like Mexico and these tough teams. And he did rather well. He just looked at home. It showed that his performance in MLS isn't a fluke and that, you know, he's a very talented player and that all these transfer rumors are worth something. He deserves to be getting these looks. But overall, I think at the end of the day, Matt Turner had the better performance. He was absolutely dominant in it for the United States. Obviously, they have a solid center back and back line pairing, so you know that helps obviously, and they have some great players, but you know they were without some great players as well too, so you have to give them credit. And obviously here at the Bent Musket, we've been pounding the Matt Turner train when it comes to him possibly getting some serious looks at on the international level, and you know, being that number one guy for Greg Berhalter. I think he proved that he staked his claim. He showed that he can do it. Obviously, we have World Cup qualifying coming up. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's at least on the roster. You know, he'll have to compete with Zach Steffen. simply just because Zach Steffen is at Man City, even though he doesn't play as much as Turner. But overall, I think Matt Turner just had the more dominant performance, was named the best goalkeeper in the tournament. And I just think he was more dominant and just kind of established his will and was able to show that, you know, could possibly be the number one goalkeeper for the United States.
My follow-up question there too is, do you think Matt Turner is the number one for the United States? Because a number of people are saying so. Alexi Lalas has said so. A lot of pundits are saying Matt Turner is the number one goalkeeper. And before you answer, I'll give my two cents too, that I think he should be the number one goalkeeper. And I went on the Stateside Soccer Show last week. If you have not looked them up, please do. I'll leave their handle in the show notes to give them a subscribe. They cover the United States men's national team and the women's team and MLS. They give recaps every week. You should listen to them. What I was telling them last week was, you know, the one concern I have about Matt Turner in this Gold Cup is that he's not going to be challenged enough. And if he wants to really make a splash with the team, and with Ochoa at the time, who was looking like competing for that third goalkeeper spot in Matt Turner's rearview mirror, you know, with him much younger, Matt Turner really has to make an impression now at age 26 to stake his claim. And that game was right before Qatar, which Matt Turner played wonderfully. And then he played wonderfully again in Mexico, wasn't challenged too much in the second half. But, you know, that was the Gold Cup you needed for Matt Turner. He only conceded once, and that was on a penalty kick. Everything you could have asked for in this Gold Cup, I thought, you know, you got from Matt Turner. And if you ever were open to the idea of Matt Turner as your number one keeper, in my opinion, you should be saying he's your number one keeper. I think the people that are still saying it's Zach Steffen had no intention of ever, you know, having Matt Turner on the depth chart in their mind. I think they always were going to say, well, Zach Steffen plays for Man City, therefore he's the number one. So there's nothing more that Matt Turner could have done. And in my opinion, he's the number one for the United States men's national team going forward. And I think the next step is he's going to get some World Cup qualifiers. And I think he's going to prove himself there. And I think we might have Matt Turner starting going into the World Cup.
Yeah, I would personally love for that to happen. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, Greg kind of has a preference for some of his MLS players. But also, too, I think he has that connection with Zach Steffen, of course. So it'll be interesting to see. Me personally, I would probably start Turner over Steffen, but I don't know if that will be what Greg does.
Yeah, we're not calling the shots. I guess that's an important distinction to make. But as I say, very, very promising for Matt Turner. Did everything you could have asked for. And, you know, he won a Gold Cup. Not a lot of, you know, American players can say they've, you know, beat Mexico in the Gold Cup. And Matt Turner was one of the most valuable players in that tournament. So really, really happy for him and everything he accomplished in that tournament. Let's get to this Tejon Buchanan news, which has thoroughly thrown me off, and I'm reading this as we're going here. It's not as bad as you made it sound here, Sam, and it's also
to make it sound bad.
Well, it's also worth noting too that because the transfer window closes tomorrow, this move might have to be done tomorrow. But it is so it's coming to a close, but the source has said that the Revolution are attempting to transfer the player out, transfer Buchanan out, and then loan him back through the remainder of the season, which is what Philadelphia did with Brendan Aaronson last year. That is what I expected the Revolution to do, if anything, with Buchanan this year. So it does not impact their chances for the MLS Cup this season. And I think that's a really, really important distinction to make. So the Revolution will know how much they're getting, and they kind of lock in that price, but they still get the benefit of playing him throughout the rest of the season, which I think is very, very important. So the two teams that are listed as the favorite is, had it here a second ago, Club Brugge in Belgium and Freiburg in Germany. So those are two interesting team names, not Juventus, not some of the bigger clubs we've heard, but those are still some pretty big clubs over in Europe that, you know, it's very excited to see players on the Revolution linked to. Sam, anything to add? Any reaction to this news?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that the Revolution are, of course, you know, trying to make it a loan back because, again, losing Tejon would be humongous. It's just seeing how the deal works out. Obviously, I think it would be pretty hard to do a deal with the Revolution right now if it doesn't involve Tejon being loaned back. But it also does depend on the player. If Tejon, you know, said it's his dream to, you know, or said he has European aspirations and we've seen players from North America go over to Club Bruges, and, you know, getting to play for, you know, Freiburg would be a pretty big deal, you know. So, and obviously there's plenty of ties to the Bundesliga to players in North America, specifically if you look at Canada, you got Alphonso Davies playing for Bayern Munich. So overall, I mean, again, it doesn't really surprise me. Of course, when you just see that Tejan Buchanan is going to be transferred soon, your heart skips a beat. But overall, you know, if they're able to get him to agree to a loan back, it should be fine, and it will actually be a good thing, because you'll know that you're going to make this profit on Tejan, and knowing that, you know, you have this plan in the works. But you just kind of got to depend on making sure you get that loan back, and that Tejan isn't kind of dead set on moving to Europe. So overall, you know, I don't think you slap the panic button and think that Tejan Buchanan is gone. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on, whether a move is made or not.
Yeah, could you imagine Carlos Hill being injured, and then the very next day we get news that Buchanan's been transferred out? For, you know, but it's not a loan back. Oh my goodness, could you imagine the reaction? My goodness, social media would be awful.
The hashtag would have literally exploded. Like Twitter itself, the servers, they wouldn't be able to handle it, and it would. I can't imagine it. Greg.
They would shut down Twitter. They would shut down Twitter, and Rev's Twitter would explode. That everything Golden Hand would have said would have come true. I mean, it would have been just an absolute mess. This news, I mean, it's obviously very big, and I'm very excited to see where the current number comes out, but I think this doesn't shock me totally. And, you know, I want to amend what I said earlier about no players going out. No players who are currently on the Revs are not going to be playing for the Revs this weekend. A move like this makes a ton of sense. And as you said, you want to lock in that value right now, because you don't know if Tejan is going to get hurt, a month from now. Or, you know, in that case, you want that profit, and you want that sale price secured, just so, you know, he doesn't lose any value now until the end of the year. One more person that actually we heard this today that also has European interest, DeJuan Jones, which is the first time we've heard this news. Soccer by Ives reported this kind of out of the blue. Didn't really know where this was coming from. Obviously very well deserved from DeJuan Jones, but European teams love their speedy wingbacks. Ives reported that two Bundesliga teams are interested. He is also drawing interest from Belgium and Greece. And the article also noted that he is signed through 2023. The Revolution have team options on DeJuan Jones's contract for 2022 and 2023, which you have to assume, both options would be exercised. So under team control through 2023. Sam, what are your thoughts about DeJuan Jones and European interest? What's your overall reaction here?
Yeah, I mean, overall, you know, we've all seen that DeJuan has had a pretty good season, but I won't lie, when I saw this report, I was kind of stunned. I was like, whoa. Obviously, I think it comes down to he's a very fast player. He's been able to develop, obviously a lot of talk around his left foot, but, you know, he's been able to develop as a player. He's been a threat in the attack. You know, there's been some times where he might have not looked the best defending, but overall, you know, this has been a very good season for him. So the fact that he does have Bundesliga clubs and, you know, possibly could, you know, is attracting their interest is, you know, very good for him. You know, also, it's kind of a testament to the team that the Revs have. And, you know, this just shows how talented they are and that they should be competing for an MLS Cup. But overall, I'm not going to lie, it kind of shocked me a bit. But it'll be interesting to see if anything does come of it. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if that's something that DeJuan wants, you know, to go play over in Europe. But overall, I would say, while it shocked me, it doesn't surprise me, because, you know, when you have a fast player who has skill like he does and is able to make that effect on the attack, you know, people are going to pay attention, especially when you have Tejan Buchanan on the other side of the field also paying attention. You know, you're going to have teams looking at Tejan and being surprised by how well DeJuan's playing. So overall, you know, it's good for news for him and good news for the team that, you know, this many players are attracting European interest.
Yeah, and boy, it's starting to kind of feel, I don't want to say like an exodus is happening, but Buchanan, I would say, is gone at this point. Even if this move tomorrow doesn't happen, I think the Revolution are motivated to sell him in the winter. Matt Turner, you know, he signed contract extensions, but he's always got the European interest there. I don't know what his, status is, if he's going to stay long-term or if he's going to move. And then we also have the issue of Gustavo Bo's contract is up at the end of the year. That's a really, you know, big issue that is kind of going by the wayside for the time being. And now we have DeJuan Jones being linked to European teams. I wouldn't be shocked if he gets sold in the winter. I wouldn't be shocked if the Revs kind of sell off some of this young talent and kind of reboot and kind of build a new core around Carlos Hill, who they've locked down long term. You know, it would be sad to see. I think DeJuan Jones has really improved year over year. But, you know, if a team comes calling and if they're willing to offer seven figures for DeJuan Jones, I think that's a very, very tempting offer. And you got to remember, too, DeJuan Jones, you know, he came out of the Super Draft, and Super Draft players are very cheap and very, you know, team-friendly contracts coming out of the draft. He signed a contract extension after his rookie year, which moved him from the supplemental to the senior roster. So he got a raise there, but I don't know the exact number, but he's still, I think at most, he might still be making five figures. He might be in the low 100,000s. You know, he's going to be due for a very big raise come the end of his contract. So I think if you're the Revolution, you know, that's a player that if you have some interest and that's, you know, you want to strike while the iron hot, and if a team is from Belgium or Greece or Germany is offering you a lot for this speedy wingback, I think you probably want to take the jump too, especially if you're already taking the jump with losing Buchanan and Turner and Bo. I think that breaking in all this cash and you know, you reapplying that money to the transfer window and bringing in new players might be necessary anyway. So yeah, it would be tough to see him go, but it's never a bad thing when you have players on your team, multiple players on your team, attracting European interest. No, go ahead, Sam.
No, and yeah, I was just going to say, you know, obviously when Christian Mafa was brought in, he was supposed to be the starter, at least, you know, especially, I know I can speak for myself, he was supposed to be the starter, and DeJuan really came in and has taken that spot from him. You know, obviously, Christian Mafa has had to deal with injuries, but, you know, DeJuan Jones has played so well that it's his spot now. And obviously, too, you know, if you were to lose a guy like DeJuan, you do have a player like Christian Mafa who can come in. Obviously, Mafa, you know, definitely hasn't performed up to the level that we've been expecting, but at one point they were expecting him to be a starter. So, you know, like you said, striking when the iron's hot, and compared to Tejon, where I think that value might stay a little bit, when it comes to DeJuan, I think, I don't want to say he's a flash in the pan, but, you know, I definitely would say the window's shorter. So, you know, if you are getting that interest, you kind of got to strike when it's happening. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. But, you know, again, just a testament to the players that are on this team.
Yeah, I don't want to say a flash in the pan, because I think he's improved year over year. But,
yeah
it's one of those things where, you know, he's getting to an age where, you know, he's not necessarily a young, you know, wing back at 25, 26, but 23, 24, that's, you know, 22, 23, 24. I think he's probably 23 at this point, I believe. I'd have to look that up, but you get the point here. You know, the value at that point might start going down a little bit. And the Revs obviously will have less leverage with 1 year left on his contract as opposed to two. So this might be a scenario in which the Revs, you know, if they're looking for cash that they can reapply, or, you know, if we wanted to take the skeptical view of Robert Kraft profit, you know, I think the winter window might be one where you are looking to sell DeJuan Jones. And as you say, he's never gone into the year as the starting left back. He's either, you know, displanted Mafla, or he's displanted Alexander Buettner, or he's displanted Edgar Castillo. So Gabriel Somi, you know, whoever, I don't remember who it was 3 years ago, but every year we have a new left back and they never pan out. So as much as we appreciate DeJuan Jones holding that down, I don't know if that is, you know, that seems to be a piece that the Revs, I don't want to say are looking to replace, but they're fine looking for a new left back. And as I say, not splurging, they don't want to splurge on DeJuan Jones's contract. They don't want to give him $500,000 to play left back every year. Not that he'd make $500,000, but you get my point. They might want to sell him for profit before giving him a raise and renegotiating a contract. Let's wrap up here real quick. We got some more news here. 4 All-Stars, Gustavo Bo, Carlos Hill, Matt Turner, and Tejon Buchanan. Sam, real quick, any surprises from you? Anyone snubbed? What's your reactions there?
It was a long shot, but I think Matt Pulser has been really underappreciated. He might be appreciated here in New England, but I think he's had a really good season holding that defensive midfield down. So I don't know if you want to say a snub because I didn't really expect him to get in, but, you know, just giving him a shout out because, you know, he's definitely had a very, I would say, underrated season. He's done rather well and has been a key piece for the club. But overall, I wouldn't really say any surprises. Me personally, you know, I voted for Carlos Hill and Matt Turner, and I don't think I voted for Tejan, actually. I might have, but I can't say if I did or not. I'm going to be perfectly honest. So, yeah, I wouldn't say I'm surprised to see Tejan because he just has had that much of an impact. So he definitely deserves it. I was a little surprised to see Gustavo Bo because he's kind of had more of a recent push. But obviously with the goal numbers that he's putting up, you know, competing for that golden boot, definitely is someone who is deserving of it. So overall, I wouldn't say there's really any surprises, any crazy misses, especially from the Revolution. I think really the fans and everyone really got it right. You know, it was good to see the commissioner make sure that, you know, Tejan was a part of the roster. And yeah, I think they did a pretty good job when it came to the All-Star roster.
Yeah, and I will say too, I believe this was Sean Donahue's take, but he said he thought Matt Polster was more deserving of an All-Star nod than Tejan Buchanan. And Tejan Buchanan, I think, kind of got in because of his big name, and he was the commissioner's pick, which normally goes to a big name player. So I think that might have been, hey, this guy is going to be sold to a European team and just had a phenomenal Gold Cup campaign with Canada. Let's put him in the All-Star game. I think that might have been what that pick was about. Not to say that Tejan Buchanan hasn't been wonderful for the Revolution this season. He hasn't been a weapon. But we see him come off early. We see him come off after 90 minutes. You know, he's certainly not to Carlos Hill's level or Gustavo Bo's level. I think Gustavo Bo certainly earned his nod because of the goal total. And I think Matt Turner also deserved a All-Star nod. Although, ironically, I think he could say that this is one of his, maybe not worst season, but I think last year he was better. I think 2 years ago he was better than his current season. But it's finally nice to see him now recognized on the league-wide scale either way. So, yeah, I wouldn't say I'm surprised by any of these four players or any of them weren't deserving. But I would have liked to have seen Matt Polster on there because I think he's put in a phenomenal season. I think it's gone by pretty quietly. And I think a lot of people, even here in New England, don't realize how well he's played, especially with a rotating cast of players pairing with him in the midfield. So, yeah, I think that's the only real kind of snub, but I can't say I'm really surprised by it as well. Some people said Adam Buxa because of his goal total. But I don't think he had much of a chance just because that striker position is so loaded. And also because he was, you know, didn't start a number of games. And he might go back to the bench once the Revolution are back at full strength with Carlos Hill and Tejan Buchanan on the field. So I'm not sure if he really was deserving of a All-Star bid, although we you know, I do appreciate some people still standing Adam Buxa at this point. So. Sam, I think that wraps us up here today. I appreciate you sticking with us. You're recording from the press box. I think you're the first person to ever record from the press box, so I really appreciate you hanging in there. Any final thoughts here? And also, can you give people where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, you know, final thoughts would be very interesting to see what happens in Philadelphia. And also, especially I know for me and you and everybody at the Event Musket, will continue to be on Carlos Hill Watch. But overall, make sure to give me a follow on Twitter at sam_minton22. Make sure to follow the Bent Musket. Pretty sure it's just at the Bent Musket. And, you know, just follow us there. We have a ton of, you know, great stuff. Seth continues to do great stuff. Jake, Joss, also this guy named Greg. He's pretty cool, too. So make sure to check us out at the Bent Musket. And kind of echoing what Seth said, just, you know, obviously we do this for the love of the game and for the love of the club. So just giving us a retweet doesn't cost you anything. Giving us a like, engaging with us, just like engaging with Revs Recap, giving them a review and engaging them with them on Twitter. You know, it might seem like a very simple thing, but, you know, it definitely means a lot to all of us. So
I think that was very well said, boss. And yeah, I'm very happy to be aboard with the Bunt Musket team. I know I've only contributed one article in my 1 month.
You've contributed two. I don't care what Seth says. You've contributed to two articles.
I was part of a roundtable where I wrote a paragraph. But yes, I'm very proud to be joining with you guys. It's been something I've been looking forward to a while. So make sure you're following at the Bent Musket on Twitter, or just bookmark them on your browser and check in every day. And you'll get to see what I write if you love my somewhat okay opinions. You can follow us at Revolution. Oh, actually, wait, before I go, I do have some other news. We did get a comment or a tweet from James Downing, who wants us to know that Diego Fagundes had an assist tonight in the Austin FC game. So congrats to Diego. And I also want to actually just call out Jake Catanese for the worst take ever, where he said that with Carlos Heel injury, he said he'd call Austin FC for Diego Fagundes, which is a horrible idea.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, Diego Fagundes has been waiting to escape New England for 2+ years.
Oh, well, for him, it's definitely terrible.
I don't think we want Diego Fagundes half-assing it back in New England. I don't think that's a really great idea. And it didn't end well with him and Bruce Arena, it seemed like. And I believe he's on a long-term contract, so that's not a one-year rental either. So, you know, maybe you make a call over to Vietnam and you see how Lee Wynn's doing and see if you could loan him for a couple months. Maybe that's a little more reasonable. But Diego Fagundes, I think he is not returning to New England as long as Bruce Arena is there. Maybe someday. Maybe he comes back and he breaks that. Actually, he probably won't break the appearance record because Andrew Farrell is going to smash it. But maybe he comes back and gets one more and passes Chalry at some point. But I don't think it's going to be in 2021. So thumbs down to Jake Catanese.
I tried making you look good, Jake. I'm sorry.
That's tough to do. That is very tough to do. Anyway, you can follow us at Revolution Recap on Twitter. You can also like our Revolution Recap Facebook page and our Revolution Recap Instagram pages. Big thank you to the people who got us to 100 followers on Instagram. You are greatly, greatly appreciated. And you're the reason for this podcast. I tweeted out, if we got to 100 followers, I would do this podcast. And I want to thank Justin Johnson. Justin K. Johnson was our 100th follower. So this podcast goes to you, Justin Johnson, and also Matthew Korzek. You know, you were follower 102, but we still appreciate you just as much. So thank you to you both for giving us a follow on Instagram after I begged you to on Twitter. That does it for us. We'll be back with a podcast on Sunday night, Monday morning to recap the Philadelphia Union game. Until then, thank you everyone for listening, and go Revs.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.